I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 489. I watched it, but I wouldn't watch it again.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah. Like, I'm like Civil War good.
Wait. Which side of the Civil War?
I just mean the movie as a whole. Like, I'm just on that, I'm on a high.
Uh-huh.
I'm in a really good place, and I'm really surprised coming off of seeing X-Men Apocalypse that I'm still feeling this good.
Yeah, I didn't see Apocalypse.
Don't. Don't.
That's what
don't,
I
heard. Don't.
That's what I heard.
All I'm
heard
gonna say, don't. All I'm going to say is I see what they're trying to do.
Which is unfuck the canon?
They fucked it really hard, and they're like, you know what, let's just scrap it and, like, try to start over.
They're trying to unfuck up the canon, and like, hey, let's scrap it and do First Class and, like, try to do it right. And then when we saw little pictures in the trailers for Apocalypse, and we all saw Olivia Munn, we all kind of lost our shit, because she's, like, hot, we both share the same birthday, you know, so, like...
Yeah, I have different opinions of Olivia Munn than most people.
Right. I don't hate her. I mean, we should.
I don't hate her. I have different opinions.
We're birthday fam. So, I mean, I liked her as Sloan on Newsroom.
I thought that she was great on Newsroom. My problem with Olivia Munn is that she will say one thing, like, in an interview and does other things. Like, you know, the big thing that she did was that she was in an interview recently, and I shouldn't say big thing, but, like, the last thing that was really, like, the last straw for me was, like, she did an interview about X-Men where she talked about, you know, how she really put herself into the role and wanted to make, you know, the experience great for fans, so she worked really hard and went and did extra training so that she could do all of her stunts so that they wouldn't have to use a stunt person. And... it's a bold-faced lie. She had a stunt person that did a chunk of her wire work. Like, she did not do all of her stunts. So I'm like, how can you go into an interview, I mean, and just blatantly lie? It's not like you were like, oh, I didn't know. They threw in this extra thing, and I didn't know they were doing the stunt, and so they got a stunt person to do it. Like, no. Like, there are pictures, and I can't remember who it was, but, you know, one of the big sites, it was either IGN or Joystick or Kotaku, and one of those guys had a photo where literally she's standing on set right next to her stunt double in costume. Like, they're butting elbows. Come the fuck on.
So it's really funny that you say that. Because seeing the movie.
Yeah, because I haven't seen the movie.
I did, because the fiance was like, if you love me, you'll go see this movie. And I was like, I really kind of don't want... Okay, fine. And so I went and I saw it, because he's my man, and I love him and support him, even when he has really shit decisions and choices that he makes. And I really didn't want to go see it, but I went. You see her, like, the little sprinklings of Olivia Munn. Like, I feel like... Psylocke could have had so much more going on in this that it would have made more sense to see her. But you'd only see her maybe four times in the movie, and if you're lucky, during some of those times, she's not saying anything. And then there are some times where she is saying stuff, and it is not relevant to what's happening. Really? But, like, one of them was really, like, her line had a lot of conviction in it, and I could see what she was trying to emulate.
I think that they just put the wrong Olivia in it. I think if they had put Olivia Wilde in,
fuck.
I would have been happier.
Anyway.
And I might have maybe seen the movie.
And here's the thing. Here's the really disappointing thing about the movie.
Uh-huh. Oh, wait. Should we say spoilers?
Spoilers.
Okay.
And granted, if you avoid this movie, that's the best spoiler ever. Because those who see it, it's like, ah, you suck. Anyway. So I'm going to try to make this a list. Because I know I'm famous for just doing the ones. But things that are wrong with this movie.
Okay.
One. We spend a lot of time with a quick origin of how Apocalypse kind of does his thing. Without any clarification as to why he does it or whatever, you know. But, okay, we could scrap that. Two, once we get him and we figure out, oh, because Moira threw, like, one throwaway line. Is like, oh, well, he needs disciples, so, like, shit won't go down till he gets them. The next cutscene, he's got two of them already. And you're like, so, okay, that was pretty quick. It was just like, I'll make you better. Touch, you're better. Like, they rushed a lot of this pacing, which, you know, and I feel like that's kind of what's the problem with these movies is, unlike with Marvel, with the Avengers, we had a lot of time to establish these characters' motives, so when they all got together, you knew there was going to be some conflict. Here, we have this ancient first mutant, because, you know, Moira knows her shit, apparently. Granted, Rose Byrne, I love you, so, like, you can do no wrong in my eyes, and I thought you rocked Moira very well, even in First Class for the 2.5 seconds you were with McAfee on the fucking beach. But, anyway, so they rushed, you know, Apocalypse, and they rushed his four horsemen. They don't even really explain why he's chosen, who he's chosen. Then, three, we have this throwaway situation with that Stryger guy who was kind of the person who was involved with maintaining Mutant X, which we all know is Wolverine. Yes. And we get that throwaway experience, and, like, it was so dumb. It was so dumb. And then here we got Jean Grey, who is also the girl who plays Sansa in Game of Thrones. Sophie, I think.
Yes.
And I dig her. And, like, I feel really bad because I think people who really love Game of Thrones, whenever she showed up on screen, all you thought was Sansa.
Right.
She just gave Sansa face throughout the whole movie.
Well, it's kind of her face.
It is. It's just suck that way. And it's great for Sansa.
It's Sophie's face.
Sophie's face. Like, Sophie's choice. Like, either it's my face or it's not. But every time she's on screen, three, the dialogue between Scott and Jean just doesn't work. Even, and, like, it brought me back to, like, the 80s, because, like, the color's back, and, like, all the angst is sort of back. And, like, here I thought, I'm like, okay, we're going to have, like, these two outcasts who haven't really figured out their shit, and now, like, they kind of just made it, like, oh, I'm just misunderstood because I can't control my power and everybody fears me. Shut the fuck up, Jean Grey. We all know how awesome you're going to be. And, like, you know, she's got this untapped power that we all know what it is, so you don't need to act like, you know, command your fucking presence, man. But anyway, so three, the dialogue between them and establishing their bond, you know, because, you know, they're going to, like, pork and be, like, lovers in the future and whatever. It just doesn't work. Like, it's so awkward. It's like that blind date that you know going in is going to be bad, and then you sit down and you're like, fuck, where's the nearest exit? That's kind of what it felt like. And I'm just like, either you guys just start making out now and just establish that this is how you're going to be, or, like, don't even look at each other's privates and go about your business, because it's just not working. And, you know, and at the very end of the movie, and I'm really not spoiling anything because I think they show bits of this in the trailer, but those of us who know X-Men enough and have seen X-Men clearly know that Jean is not just a telepath who can read people's minds and manipulate them, but she's actually a higher being that is, like, totally fucking kick-ass and kind of unstoppable if she goes nuts.
Correct. And, she's Phoenix.
She's Phoenix. And, you know, this whole time she's like, I can't control my power. I'm in everybody's head and there's this power inside of me and it keeps, like, wanting to merge out and bust out. And I'm like, yeah, because it's your fucking Phoenix powers. And they don't even really, they don't talk about it. Because
it's too early to talk about it.
It is.
Again,
it is.
Young X-Men.
I get it. But at the very end, when Apocalypse is, like, fucking people's skulls in, because, you know, he's so unstoppable that that's exactly what he could do, and he's trying to get into Xavier's body because, you know, it's the one ability that Apocalypse doesn't have is to be everywhere at all times, the way that Xavier can be in Cerebro and whatever. And all of a sudden, like, he's kind of got the upper hand. It looks like Apocalypse is going to win. And Jean Grey's all like, now I'm confident about myself now. Let me walk on air, spread my arms out like Jesus, and oh God, there's this red stuff around me that conveniently looks like a phoenix. I'm like, way too early! Way too early! Especially because I thought in that, in the canon, the way that I remember at least the show, the TV show, when all this stuff happens, doesn't Jean Grey go into Cerebro and, like, connect herself to everybody, and that's how they're able to, like, supercharge fucking Xavier and...
Okay, hold on, let's take a step back. So you're mixing movie with TV show.
I am.
And not comic.
Okay, well, I didn't read this comic.
Okay, so the Felix Saga is probably one of the better sagas to read in the Uncanny X-Men world.
Okay.
Because basically it's the Brotherhood that want to unleash the Phoenix. Like, Xavier knows that that power is there within Jean, and part of the reason why he's always on Jean's shit and has her as his sidekick and Scott as
leader. Because he knows how potentially powerful she is?
Correct. And so he's really trying to keep tabs on her. But the Brotherhood realized that she's, like, the key to domination, so they work up this scheme to basically kidnap Jean and turn her into one of theirs so that they can get her to untap the Phoenix and other stuff. So they convince her after this big drawn-out fight and whatever, and she's got amnesia, that she's, like, one of them. And so, like, Scott's on this big pilgrimage trying to find her, and he ultimately, like, shrugs off most of his X-Men leader duty because he's looking for Jean.
He's like, looking for that pee, man. My right. Pussy's gone. I gotta go get it.
And because Jean's no longer around Xavier, he can't use Cerebro to find her. For whatever reason, he can't pinpoint her because she's so wearing a mask.
He can pinpoint any mutant on the planet except Jean.
At this time. Because some of the Phoenix power has come out and it is protecting itself from Xavier now that it has gotten to the root for a little bit. But it backfires on the Brotherhood, and Jean goes apeshit, basically takes out the Brotherhood.
It made me so mad because they just establish that she has all these nightmares and she's all prophetic, and like there are like little flashes of red, which I knew right off the bat what that was going to be. And I'm like, no, it's way too early because one, she doesn't become Phoenix until she's technically
look,
the age that
look,
was in the movie.
That's only if they're gonna go by canon, which, as we've learned,
they won't.
Nobody necessarily does. So, like, here's the deal that you have to take back with Apocalypse, and it's the one of the main reasons why I opted to not go see it, because I knew you were gonna see it this week, and I was like, well, I should probably go see it too, so we can, like, talk about it together. And then I was like, no, I'm not, because my gut, as I watched the movie evolve through the trailers and, like, the stories that were coming out around it, I was like, there's no way that this movie is going to be good.
Avert your eyes.
Okay, and all of the goodwill that these guys have built up, you know, with using the Days of Future Past is going to be gone. Because you either have to do Apocalypse one of two ways. You either have to focus on the origin story of Apocalypse and how the team comes together to fight him, because, you know, depending upon where you're reading in comics, or if you're just going off of, which most people going to the movies are, didn't read the comics, they were fans of the animated show.
Right, which I am one of those people.
Okay, and the animated show was great. And as you well know, like, they didn't spend any time talking about young X-Men fighting Apocalypse. It was all the full-grown X-Men fighting Apocalypse. Like, that's the deal. And so, when I first heard about the X-Men movie, I was really excited about Apocalypse because it seemed like they were going to be focusing on Jubilee.
Yep, I only see her twice in the movie. At the beginning, when you're at the fucking school.
Again, you don't have to yell at me.
Sorry. And at the very end, when everyone gets saved. That's it.
Okay.
Oh, and wait, so, sorry, three times. She says one line to Scott.
So I was kind of excited because I was like, oh my gosh, like, it'll be really cool. Not that I was a huge fan of the Jubilee character, although she's funky and fun and I like her, but I just love the idea that we were going to have a movie that, you know, one of the major protagonists was going to be an Asian person. And then I started to hear news about that completely falling off, and I was like, okay.
A lot of people don't, and I mean, I sat on this for a long time, and it took you a long time to convince me just how awesome Jubilee becomes.
She does. Her. Like, again, in the beginning, she's, you know, a dumb kid, but that's the thing. She's supposed to be, like, the naive, innocent, and the embodiment of, I have this great power, but I don't know how to use it yet because I'm so new to it, so all I can do are these firecrackers. But down the road,
sounds like
Jubilation Lee is a badass. Okay? I like that kind of evolution of the character. And I thought, okay, alright, so if you can do that and at least start that journey with a character, you know, that is a person of color, like, that would be an amazing thing. And then that started to go away in various trailers that I saw. She started disappearing into the background or wasn't presented at all.
Like, and then times in the movie.
And then, like, the whole, the first time that everybody saw Apocalypse, and I was like, what is with this puny purple person? Like, did you guys actually look at any of the comics? Because, like, Apocalypse... Oh,
he gets bigger.
I know he gets bigger, but the whole point of Apocalypse is that the reason that his character, I think, was so intimidating wasn't just the size, but it was just the look of the character. You know, in the comics, which they carried over into the animated movie, Apocalypse just looks like the end of days. He looks like a soft demon. You know what I mean? Like, not red, because he's not red, he's purple, but, like, there is no joy in his face, there is no softness in the way that he is drawn.
Right.
He just looks like the end of days in a humanoid form. And I don't get that feeling from any of the trailers and the stills that I've seen. So I was like, okay, so you got a problem there. As I just heard of, like, how they were changing the story and the focus, I just became more and more convinced that this was not going to be a good X-Men movie. Because you got to go one of two ways. It either has to be the origin of how Apocalypse, one, became aware of this particular Earth and decided to go and do his thing. And the explanation of his thing and why he's so focused on the particular mutants that he's focused on to be his four horsemen.
Right, because they don't explain it. It seems like the first four mutants that he talks to that he doesn't just instantly kill. He's like, yep, you're cool. You're cool. Fuck you. You're cool. I'm out. And it's just like, okay. Because one of them is Psylocke and the other one is Storm. And I will say, of all the turds that were in this movie, there were two moments that I felt, all right, maybe three if you count like the little stinger at the end, three very good shining moments in this movie, which is really sad because the movie is long. One, their establishment of young Storm.
Okay.
I thought the actress did a great job. Anytime you get Storm in a mohawk who's badass and just trying to establish herself and, you know, just trying to live. I get that. And she has, and already this particular actress already gave Storm this regalness about her, which back from the cartoon days, like, I loved that about Storm. She was all about, hey, this is who I am. I embrace everything. I embrace all of it. And this is just...
So when she ran away for a while with the Morlocks, but that was more because she didn't know who she was.
Right, I mean,
and then she remembered, and then remembered that she was the queen, but she got the X-Men again. So.
We all fall down.
Look, we all gotta go on Rumspringa, okay?
Right. And then she came back, and she's like, you know what? I saw some stuff, I lived some stuff, I know better. The end. And that's, like, that's it.
Look, Morlocks, you've got a good leader. I'm not that person anymore, but we can still be down. I gotta go do this thing now, because that's where I'm at.
I'm gonna put this down now. You have fun. But this actress did, I think, a great job, and, like, the way she delivers her lines and the way that, even though she has no idea when she's talking with Apocalypse and whatever, like, just how potentially threatening he could be to her existence, like, she's still standing firm and tall, and it's not just out of ignorance because she's young, but I think it's just that strong personality that we have all grown to love in Storm outside of Halle Berry Storm, but that's beside the point.
Look, here's the thing. I love Halle Berry. Halle Berry doesn't need to do superhero movies, okay?
So establishment of Storm was very good and thought out, and it made sense. Of all of the reasons of who his Apocalypse, you know, his horsemen were, she made the most sense in my mind.
Well, Psylocke is a massively powerful...
Which they don't talk about or explain at all.
Okay.
At all. All
right. Well, then that's the problem.
Because the deal is,
like, in the universe, Psylocke is at times more powerful than Jean Grey, and at other times just as powerful as Jean Grey. And the times where she's just as powerful is when the phoenixes emerge. So Psylocke is like the undercover, underground, like, queen of psychic ability.
They don't tap into that.
Yeah, she's just as powerful as Jean Grey, but if she lets herself be.
Well, they never explain that.
Yeah, like, and that's a problem. Because you need to understand why Psylocke is, like, immediately chosen by Apocalypse to be a horseman.
Apocalypse kills her, like, boss guy, and she's like, I'm just so bored with everything. Nothing really does anything for me. And he's all like, you're the one. Boom. And, like, Storm's like, whatever. Like, it doesn't make it. And then Angel, they got Archangel, which they don't do anything with, really, except the fact that he has wings, and all of a sudden now they're metal, and now he can, like, throw daggers with them. All
right, so
his ass beat. It's sad. So anyway, going back.
So you don't know how Archangel got his metal wings.
No. Well, okay. You see Apocalypse touch him, and then all of a sudden his wings start becoming metal.
No. Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well
I think in the cartoon that's how they did that.
In the movie,
he lopped off his original wings.
Well, he didn't lop them off. In the movie, he got seriously hurt and burnt on an electrical fence. And it mauled one of his wings, so he couldn't. He was just sitting in a barn drinking and being sad.
Mm.
And Psylocke's like, I know this dude Apocalypse. He'll be totally great for the horsemen. Let's go find him. And they go and they teleport and they find him. And his wings all fucked up. And she's like, never mind. He's not the fighter I thought he was. And Apocalypse is like, wait, touch. Like, literally, this is just like a tag you're it with awesome
power. Yeah, because Archangel was one of Apocalypse's horsemen. They started going through this line in the animated TV cartoon, and Apocalypse was the one who gave him his metal wings, and it was through a process because Archangel was damaged that he fixed him, but when he woke up, he was like, these aren't my wings. And he goes, they are now, and you are mine, and blah, blah, blah. And then he made him do all this bad shit, double agent shit.
No strong, nothing. Give you nothing. But anyway, the establishment of Storm and how they built up that character was also very good. Sleeper hit on this, I have to say, has to go to whoever they got to play Nightwalker.
Okay.
Because at first I was a little worried because I was a big fan of Alan Cummings.
And you mean Nightcrawler?
Yes. I was a big fan of Alan Cummings.
Alan Cummings did a great Nightcrawler.
This kid, and I'm going to say kid, even though I'm sure he's like a young adult and he has a great future ahead of him.
He might be married. You don't even know.
I don't know. He gave that quirkiness that you got from the TV cartoon show, and he delivered it so well. And I was like, okay. I'm like, I'm on board for these two characters already. And I mean, obviously, any time that Quicksilver was on screen, he completely dominated any scene. Like, he could really not be doing anything, and you're still like, hell yeah. And, like, they do that whole subplot with him being Magneto's son and all that, which I'm kind of glad, because obviously the Quicksilver from the Marvel Universe got killed, and, you know, they were trying to sever all that connection, so I'm kind of glad that we saw that happen.
Wait. Time out. The Quicksilver in Apocalypse is Magneto's kid?
Is Magneto's son, yep. And it's so convenient because so Eric loses himself because he's been like living like a normal person, like out in like the Swiss Alps or wherever the fuck he is, and like a guy nearly gets killed at his shop, and he uses his powers to like save him, and somebody saw it and reports to the police, and the police all show up at Eric's house, and he's like, look, I was just about to leave. I know I set my boundaries, but I just saved this man's life. I just want to go with my family. Mind you, he has a little girl named Nina who has these abilities to, like, command the fucking birds or whatever. And, like, she doesn't know how to control it yet. And, like, they're like, we kind of can't let you leave. And the girl, you know, and, like, Eric gives himself up. He's like, just let my girl go. Let her go with her mom. You can arrest me, whatever. And the little girl goes, you know, is upset because her dad's being arrested. And she's like, I won't let them have you. And these birds all go fucking nuts. And they all have fucking bow and arrow because they know that, you know, they can't have anything metal because, you know, Magneto can, like, freaking manipulate it and shit. And one of the freaking rookies, like, scared, lets go of his, like, arrow, and it pierces through Eric's wife and his daughter. And he's like, so is this what the world wants me to be? And all of a sudden, he takes off this locket that he has, and he uses the locket to kill all, like, 18 guys. And, like, he's kind of upset.
Well, yeah.
For good reason. Right after this happens, it shows, like, a TV with the news about, you know, Magneto killing, like, a whole police force. And Quicksilver is, like, watching it, and he hears his mom, and he, like, shoots over to, like, Pinball or whatever. And she's like, I know you were watching it. You're going to go after him? And he's like, yep. And he leaves. So I'm like, okay. So clearly he knows. And, like, at one point, he has the ability to tell Magneto that he's his kid, but he doesn't. And I'm like, of course, because they want to build up that tension and whatever. But it's like, hey, Eric, I know you thought all of your life's work was dead and you have no family, but you do. You do, Magneto. Look at this guy. Look at this awesome specimen of creature that you made. But anyway, that's beside the point. I mean, those were really the three biggest, best things to come out of this movie, which is really kind of sad because I really had my hopes up for Jean Grey, because like I said, I really like Sophie. I love her in Game of Thrones. And I feel like they didn't give Psylocke enough to do. They didn't really establish Jean as well as I was hoping they would. Though the tension between her and Wolverine when they set him free, I was like, okay, I could see why he'd get obsessed with her now. Like, the way that they set that up. So that was like a nice little nugget to remember a little bit. And at the very end, I think the stinger, which I may have wrong, but the way they have it set up kind of makes it look like they're gonna show us Lady Deathstrike, which I am kind of curious about, but we've had so much Wolverine that I feel like they're just going to saturate us with that whole lineage. Because you've got Wolverine, you got Sabretooth, now we're going to probably get Lady Deathstrike, maybe. And just, I'm so done. And that's really kind of sad. But anyway. That was a horrible tangent. We could totally cut that out, but it was really not worth seeing. But now I want to talk about what I really want to talk about. So one of our fans on Twitter asked us to look into a game.
Ascended Leo.
Hey, Ascended Leo, what's up? Anyway, so he had asked us to look into a game. Ninja looked right at the first page and said, nope. And I said, okay. And
Wait, time out. I looked at the page and music started playing, and I saw the visual as it came up because my internet was running slow, so it took a hot minute for everything to load.
And when
everything loaded in, I was like, yeah, I can't look at this. This is a panda thing. Let me text her about this.
And I was like, I'm all about that. So then I load it, and I'm like, all right. And the minute I loaded the page, which the one I saw was the Kickstarter page, which I'll talk a little bit more about, I got an instant rush of excitement, then fear, and then I had to pee a little. So I think it's a really good start when you have to rush to the bathroom. A long time ago, I was talking about PT and my love for that playlist. Uh-huh.
And also Allison.
Well, when PT got shut down, someone's like, I will lift the mantle and I will create Allison Road. And I was like, yay, because from the little bit that they let you play it in the demo and the alpha and all the visuals, it looked right out of PT. Well, that has since been canceled, Allison Road, which is kind of sad, but I actually kind of had a sneaking suspicion it was going to happen. But from the ashes of PT and Allison Road, now comes Visage. And I'm probably saying it wrong. You can correct me later if you want, but Visage just doesn't sound right. But Visage kind of does. Because
yep.
It kind of makes me think of Mirage and, like, Illusion and all of that. But anyway. So when you load the page, instantly you're looking at a backdrop of a very similar hallway that, sadly, I actually have a hallway that looks very much like this in my house. Which, right after I saw that, I was like, you know what? Maybe 11 o'clock at night is not the time to watch this and absorb this. So I'm going to give myself 6 minutes, if I can make 6 minutes. Then I'm going to try to watch something super happy so that I can go to bed and not have nightmares. And then first thing in the morning, totally going to watch it. I made it through 8 minutes, surprisingly, with two jumps in between those. So that clearly lets you know that this game is not playing around. I did not sleep very well, but that's my fault. I own it. I'm an adult. And then at the crack of dawn, and by that I mean roughly 4:12 this morning, I proceeded to watch the rest of this alpha gameplay that they were showing on their Kickstarter website. Literally, you don't know who you are, and the tagline for it is that the tagline for the game, which is called Visage, is each death has its own visage. How will you handle them, or how will you see them? And I was like, ah, fuck no. And I watched the whole alpha gameplay, and I have to give myself like a nice small soft clap, because nothing too loud, because I'm jumpy as fuck right now. I don't know who we are, but we're in a house, and it always starts that way. You're in a house and shit goes wrong. So like the last sanctuary that we all have in our lives are our homes, and what do? They bring the fear right through our front door. And you are, or rather the player's first person, very, very hyper-realistic, very much like PT. Like, literally, your only abilities, at least that they show so far, is that you're able to walk through the entire house. You're able to open drawers, open doors that are allowed to be opened, and you're allowed to zoom in and look at things. So already, with that limited mobility and, you know, accessibility, it already lets you know that they're going to force you to do things that you, as the player, know you don't want to do, but you know you have to make the character do in order to progress. So there's going to be a lot of fight and flight in this experience, which I'm a fleer. I love to run. The idea of having to stand my ground is not something I want to do. I know as a human being I should, but no. And, the thing I think that throws this off the most for me in this alpha gameplay demo that they showed is that most of the house is extremely well lit, and they force you to go into areas of your house that are not well lit. But even though like these spaces are lit and they're welcoming, there's still something very really eerie about them. So even when you think you're okay, you're clearly not. So as I was reading more on their website, they pretty much say that a lot of horrible things have happened in this house. In every room, something has happened to somebody or somebodies. And when a life is taken through the medium of hate, it can't be purged or cleansed. Something always stays behind. Which they tend to generally say in most horror things, you know, if someone was taken violently or rushed, that souls can't, you know, travel on and whatever, if you want to be spiritual. With that tagline in my mind already, knowing that I'm just exploring and I have no means to protect myself, you are completely at the mercy of whatever the experience in whatever room is going to be. In the gameplay, they made you walk upstairs, and the soundscape is probably what makes this even more suspenseful and terrifying, which, you know, in the VR world, sound is everything, because there's not much that they can do to, like, they can send things at you, but unless they can get to your auditory and your eyes and your ears, then it doesn't, because there's nothing touching you personally, but you, the character, absolutely. And that thing in your brain that allows you to, like, feel things that you don't feel, like that whole phantom limb scenario and outer body experience stuff completely, is what makes VR in the game space a doable thing. If the sounds are not right and they don't elicit that response, then your game is going to fail. But this playable demo already puts me, and I'm not even looking at pictures of it right now, and I'm remembering flashes of what I was looking at and watched this player, you know, this demo or do, and I've got goosebumps, because I could remember, oh, I remember when we walked into that bedroom, all of a sudden, like, there was this little tink, and then the door slammed, or you just heard this whisper of, like, you know, like this heavy breathing, so you know something is lurk. Some of these jump scares, well, absolutely predictable, were placed in a place that you wouldn't expect them to happen. So they have found a way to make some old universal trope feel new and exciting. Ninja, if you were running from, like, a mass murderer, and and you had the chance to run into a closet, a really big one, mind you, not like a little one with, like, none of those slats or anything, because that's the first way you get caught, but, like, a deep closet with a bunch of shit that you could, like, hide under. Which, let me tell you guys, like, as a side note, if I was ever being pursued and I got into a giant big closet, I used to do this as a kid. I would, like, hide under piles of clothes and, like, lay on top of shoes and shit. And, like, because no murderer is going to just stab through piles of clothes if it looks like it's an established mess already. So I always feel like I have a better chance of survival of doing something like
that. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. If I'm running from a killer in a house, I'm not staying in the house.
Right, get the fuck out the house.
I'm, like, going out a window. Like, if there's a mini roof that I can get to from, like, a higher floor to get down to the ground, then I'm out the window on the mini roof then on the ground, and I'm gone. I'm not in the house. So I'm not going in no closet or a basement, or I'm finding out.
Oh, no basement, but I'm just saying.
No, I'm finding out.
I am all about, like, the art of camouflage, if at all possible.
Yeah, no, I'm so, all like, about
the
out.
If I don't have an out, and I'm like, maybe if I
no,
can, like...
There's always an out. There's windows. Sure, it's gonna hurt. But I would rather...
Because that is not true.
Here's the thing. No. Because I don't play those games.
Well, it's a movie.
I don't watch those movies.
And literally, the collector...
Who are you talking to? You know me.
I know this. You didn't see the collector. I saw the collector at midnight at the movie theater, which was
I don't watch those things. You silly. Anyway. I don't watch people let's play Five Nights at Freddy, okay?
After a while, you get desensitized to that stuff.
I don't. That's a thing, Panda. I don't get desensitized to the jump scare. That's why I can't do them.
Okay, well, anyway.
So I don't.
But.
In movies?
Going back to the game, at one point, you're going through what I believe is the master bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And, like, all these rooms look like they've been lived in.
Uh-huh.
Really recently, so like you kind of got like the Lost Village meets the Texas Chainsaw Massacre meets
PT.
Yeah, so you have all these like it definitely looks like people have lived there fairly recently, and you go into this closet and like their shoes, their boxes, and like there's like this weird mini door too that's also in your closet, which I thought was kind of weird. And the minute I saw that, like, I had a flash of the Amityville Horror, which, to this day, I still can't watch the original.
No. I watched the original, and that, I in all honesty, like, the last, like, straight-up scary fucking movie, because I don't count Scream as a scary movie.
Neither do
Amityville
I.
is the last scary movie that I watched.
I've watched the newer one with Ryan Reynolds when he kills that dog and, like, whatever. Like,
nope.
I watched that.
Nope.
I can't watch the original. The original terrifies me in a way that... You know, and I'm surprised because, like, when you see stills of it, I'm like, that doesn't look scary. But in the context of what happens in it, you're like, oh,
When you leave an active imagination to imagine more things than it's presented with, and the original Amityville does a really good job of creating and keeping you in suspense and on edge the entirety of the movie. Like, even in the places where you feel like, oh, this is safe because it's bright out and just getting to the house. Like, even there is this ominous feel.
You just can't.
That you can't shake. And I think that's one thing that, like, a lot of the newer suspense and horror movies have lost is the keeping that, being able to build that ominous thing right off the bat so that even in the safe moments you don't feel safe.
You're always unsure.
Right. And so that keeps you on edge, that keeps you hypersensitive to things, so that when things do happen, you're already in a heightened emotion state, and so...
To perceive the fear in that they want to present.
You know, and I don't think that many movies today do that very well, or do that in the same way as some of the older ones. Like, I tried to watch the new Amityville, and ultimately, early on, I was just like, no. One, I'm not going to enjoy this. But two, like, because I was telling myself, like, I don't watch these type of movies. I should not be trying to watch this movie. I'm not going to enjoy it, so why am I trying to do this? So I had that filter on. And then the second filter was, it just didn't capture me the same way as the first one, the original one did. When I watched it, so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to bust out now before I, like, don't sleep for 3 days.
All right. So, but like I said, I saw the newer one with Ryan Reynolds, and I enjoyed it, and I could get through that, but I can't watch the original. And I'm not even talking, like, 2, 3, 4, or the next, because I've watched all of those.
Right.
I just can't watch
the first. It's number one.
Yeah. And, but you're
I didn't see any of the other ones.
I did. Because most of them happened during the, like, the big scariest moments seem to happen during the day, and that's what they're playing with in the series, I think, a lot. But anyway, you're in this closet, and you see through these two pieces of clothing, like, another door, which is kind of weird for a closet.
Typically.
And as you peer through the little space between these two things, a female face emerges out. Now, it's not decrepit or anything, but it's in this screaming, agonizing kind of face. Kind of like, oh, I don't know, like someone who had been strangled. And then a whole body kind of merges out, and it kind of runs past issue, sort of. But then it opens up the area that you can now navigate through the store. But anyway.
So this screaming body runs past you?
Past you. And at one point, when you're going to that master bedroom, if you look behind you, you see this hooded figure, blackish figure, kind of walking up the stairs. But it doesn't move unless you move. Or at least the way that it kind of showed in the screen. It looked like it didn't move unless you moved your stick. And it wasn't a quick movement either, which makes me think that if he had, like, jutted the stick, it would have, like, jerked. And, like, had that element of fear that we've seen in a lot of the horror movies that they're doing right now. Going into some of the screenshots that I saw, because, you know, this, I think the alpha gameplay trailer was only about 12 minutes long, which is a lot of minutes to be thrown all this fearful stuff. And like I said, I only made it through 8 minutes the first time around. And some of the still shots that they show all this other stuff that clearly doesn't look like the house above. So it kind of has that, if I had to align it to a movie that has done horror well, that is still fairly recent in my mind, it would be the remake that Whedon did with Cabin in the Woods.
Oh.
Which...
Also, did not watch that. Did see the original, did not watch that one.
I appreciate everything that happens in this remake, because they took the staple tropes and then gave it more reason than the established rules that horror has given its genre over the years. So
all I need to know is, does one of the rapists get their dick bit off? That's all I need to know.
Dick bit off? No.
Okay, then it's not as good as the original.
I mean, I'm gonna say this, though. That they put this element of mysticism and ritual and sacrifice in there that actually made it far more, and I hate to say it because I don't think this word really works, but I'm going to say it anyway, kind of humane?
No.
I'm going to say that.
She bit his dick off.
No, I'm talking about the new one.
I'm talking about the old one. That's like some good comeuppance, man.
There's
I don't need to go into it. We're good. We got anyway. The topic. Because I haven't even gotten to my thing yet. Haven't got to Overwatch.
I know. But anyway. So, with Visage, like, I'm really curious about how well-received this is going to be. Because, like I said, visually, it definitely has the appeal that P.T. and Allison Road had delivered.
It sounds like it's scary as hell.
Yeah, and it looks like a game that screams PC. It screams VR more than anything. However, on the Kickstarter page, while those are the two avenues that they're aggressively going after first, they have made mention that they want to see this hit PS4 and Xbox One. And so when I first read that first bit of the paragraph, I was like, oh, well, yes, I can't play that because I don't have a PC. And then I saw two sentences later and I was like, ah! It's like, oh, no.
You're like, I get out of this one because I don't. Oh, shit.
And now I console. Don't. And now I don't, because their intention is to get it onto consoles. And it's one of those days that I look back and I think about how souped up our audio is in my living room with our giant fucking TV and the scary fucking hallway behind me. And I'm like, aw, shit. All the shit. But I'm looking forward to this. If it does come to PS4, I'll probably live stream it via Twitch. So people can totally watch me scream my fucking head off in my living room. Because that would totally happen. Scaredy pants, but I enjoy it. And that's That's my big, that's the biggie thing.
Alright, so Ascended Leo, thank you for the recommendation. Yeah. Obviously, Panda had quite a fun time.
I had an experience checking
it out. Hey, the 35 seconds that I spent on the page, I felt like I got, you know, my money's worth, and I was good.
Free.
So, again, I might have to throw
some money at this.
You're probably going to need to. I mean, because, like, at the end of the day, here's the deal. Like, I appreciate scary games, and I really do, you know, and, like, I try to, whenever you'll actually come over and play it, watch you play scary games, and that at least makes it a little bit easier for me, especially, like, you know, because, one, it's daylight, and two, we're cracking jokes the entire time, so they're less scary, because I don't like scary stuff.
If you can make something terrifying a little less terrifying, then you win.
Like, every scary movie that I watched when I was younger, I watched because whoever was either babysitting me at the time or whoever I was hanging out with at the time was watching it, and I just could not get around not watching it. Like, Amityville, I saw because one of my babysitters was watching it when they were taking care of me. Halloween, the original Halloween, I saw, same deal, babysitter was watching it.
I saw the remastering of The Omen with Esh Mom and Hot Mess.
Okay, I watched the original Omen with Mom.
So she had a thing about Omen because when the remaster came to theater, so she's like, "We have to go see that." I'm like, "I ain't about no."
Omen was a big deal when it came out, and you know,
and we went and saw it, and that movie I thought was one. It was very, very good. Like, I enjoyed it, but they had certain things patched into certain speakers in the theater, so that one scene where like it's a big zoom in of the phone, and then the phone rings. Like, I didn't jump when he got possessed and he was murdering people. I jumped at that fucking phone. And I was like, ah. It was, and she laughed. She's like, "It's a fucking phone, Mandy." And I'm like, "That was a really scary phone. It just kind of jumped out at me. Like, no, I am not about that." And that's where my love of jump scares, I think, kind of came from.
You know, I appreciate scary games, especially if they are really able to transport a person to a place where they do get, you know, generally scared or on edge. Because I do think that there is an enjoyment of, you know, being scared but knowing that you're safe, so you don't really need to be scared.
Well, fuck that. VR is going to take away that sense of security.
It, you know, flies off your endorphins, which is a good thing, I think, for people. But it's not my bag. I appreciate it for other people, and, like, people that enjoy it, like, more power to you. Like, do you, boo-boo. It's not my bag. So, like, you will not see me play a scary game. It is on my resolution list to be in the room while Panda plays one and take some video of it. But I will not be playing it, which reminds me, I need to play Gran Turismo.
Yes, because horror movies totally made me think about racing games.
No, I was thinking of my list, and I still have not played.
Speaking of lists, you were talking about an anime that you've now crossed off your list because you watched it. So what's up with that?
Like I said, I've been trying to go through my anime list because there's a bunch of new stuff rolling around this season, as well as second seasons of stuff from last season.
Hashtag waiting for Food Wars.
Yeah, seriously, like, what up, Food Wars? Let's get on that shit. But I decided to watch an anime completely just based off of the name. I didn't look at the description before I started it. I really should have.
Oh, no. Is there a lot of incest?
No. Thankfully, there's no incest.
Incest is wincest.
No, it's not wincest. It's lame sauce.
Is it, though?
It is. It really is. It really is.
So tell us the title of this anime.
Okay, so the anime was called Pandora in the Crimson Shell Ghost Urn.
Okay.
All right. And I was like, hey, you know, I've liked other series that had Pandora in them. You know, Pandora Hearts was one that I liked.
Oh, man, it took me a while to get into Pandora Hearts.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, the way that it cliffhangered on the end, you know, can...
You're like, what? Yeah.
People off because I didn't do another season, and I really wish that they had because that would have been cool anyway. So I was like, hey, you know, I haven't watched any magical girl anime in a while, and this definitely seemed like one. Madoka Magica, that fucker, that
one has set the bar.
That
magical girls everywhere.
Madoka Magica is the type of series that breaks your heart because you look at the box art and the description, you think it's going to be one thing, and then they're like, no, we're actually going to yank your heart out. Deal with it, motherfucker.
And NASA is like the school days of this generation.
Seriously, without the sex. All right, so anyway, back to Pandora.
Except for the twist being in the last episode.
Hey, we're not talking about this. I talk now. I'm the captain now. Okay, so I turned on Pandora in the Crimson Shell, which is on Funimation, and it is a 12-episode run, and it's only a single season, I believe. It's based off of a manga, and I should have known that something was going to be up with it, because when I went to go watch episode 2, I started paying attention to, like, the description and stuff. It was rated TVMA, so that should have been clue number one that something was going to pop off. But you know, sometimes with anime, you just don't know if, like, it's rated MA because there's going to be a lot of violence and, like, blood.
Visceralness, yeah.
Or that there's going to be sex. Like, you just don't know with the MA until you get into it.
I mean, when I think Pandora and the Crimson Shell, I kind of think of, like, vagina.
Yeah, you should. And I should have. So, I should have. I should have. If I put the title... Here's the thing. Again, if I put the title with the TVMA, I probably would have.
Like,
because I just jumped in because of the title.
Girl vaginas.
Listen.
I am.
Okay. So, it's a Kadokawa production. And you know, I pretty much love everything that Kadokawa does. Damn near every series that, like, I really, really enjoy right off the bat, it usually always starts with that fucking Phoenix logo, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be good. So I got excited because I started running the first episode, and I saw the Kadokawa thing. And so basically the story focuses on this character named Nene Nanakarobi. And Nene is a full-body cyborg. So we're in a future-ish off version of the world where people are using robotic prosthesis across their bodies, and people also have androids that are programmable, and they have a lot of rules and regulations that these androids have to apply by, but there are very few full-body cyborgs, which means basically just their brain is put into a robotic body, but they are still human in that they have all of their emotions and all of their brain functions. They are not diminished in any way. And there have only been a handful of successful full-body cyborgs in the world. And it turns out that typically only teenagers, it's something about younger people that are able to do it, because most people, when they get a robotic prosthesis, it takes them a very, very long time to learn how to manage that new limb correctly. All right. You know? And depthly, but there's something about what they call adapters that are able to very quickly manipulate the body. And Nene is one of them. And we don't learn until later on in the series why Nene is a full-body cyborg. Because she's young. We don't actually ever see the characters in school, because a bunch of shit pops off on this island that she ends up on. But I'm going to say that she's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 16 years old. And so she's on this ship heading to this island to go live with an aunt, basically. And the aunt is named, I want to say Tatakoma or something like that, but I'm going to mess that up. Takumi, there it is. Okay, so anyway, Nene, while she's on this ship, which is basically like a cruise ship going to this gorgeous island, ends up being discovered by this woman named Uzal, who Uzal is like, if you ever watched Tenchi Muyo, if you took, like, Ryoko and made and mashed her with Washu, so she was, like, a super genius, but in that tall, like, hypersex body, that would be Uzal. So her full name's Uzal Delilah. And she is extremely brilliant. And she has her own, what is believed to be full-bodied cyborg, but we learn that she's actually a combat android with her that has cat ears named Clarion. And she sees Nene and thinks that Nene is a android. And because no owner is nearby, she's like, and she's like a really high-class one, so I could probably get like a pretty penny for her or do some stuff to her. And she walks up to her because she's playing this game and then realizes, oh my god, like, wait, dude, she's totally a full-body cyborg and is not an android, and gets, like, obsessed with her and realizes that she actually has some use for her. So they get to the city and everybody, like, breaks because Nene's got to go to her aunt and Uzal and Clarion have to go to their lab or whatever, but then all hell breaks loose and there's this big explosion and Nene's like, I gotta save my friends because she's all about world peace and being good. So she goes off to track them down. Turns out that one of Uzal's creations was hijacked, and it just so happens to be a device named Boer that could destroy pretty much the entire planet, and it's gone haywire. So she's like, so I need Clarion to go and, like, turn it off because they turned it on wrong or whatever, and he's gonna blow up the whole fucking island and then, like, the planet. Clarion goes into attack mode, and she's able to attack, but not, like, knock things down. Uzal, Clarion, after Clarion gets hurt and loses an arm, and Nene find a room in the lab, and Nene gets knocked out by Clarion. And then she wakes up, and we learn that Uzal has done something and modified Nene's code somehow. And now Nene can use the Pandora protocol just like Clarion could, but the activation of it is that Nene has to take her middle finger and tell Clarion that she needs to access the Pandora system, at which point Clarion has to lift up her skirt so that she can open the panel that's right above her red underwear, right on top of her vagina, to slip her finger into the access port to access the Pandora protocol. So there's your crimson shell. And I'm sure that if they really could have gotten away with it, it would have been down in the underwear as opposed to, like, right on top of the underwear. And at this point, I'm like, oh, come the fuck on, cartoon. Really? And so Uzal, because she's a little bit of a freak, programmed Clarion to always make a enraptured look whenever the Pandora system is...
Oh, of course, right?
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that...
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, really? And then she, like, puts on her pretty girl dress when she accesses the Pandora system.
Stop!
So she's got, like, a little top hat. It kind of reminds me of... What was the lead character in 10-2 Final Fantasy? Yuna?
Yeah.
Okay, so it kind of reminds me of her outfit where she had, like, the half skirt flowing off to the side. And then, like, a short skirt underneath that.
Oh, gosh.
And it's, like, Harlequin colors, and she has, like, a little mini top hat.
Oh, no.
And then she can, like, pick what abilities that she wants. She can only have, Nene can only have these abilities for a short time. It's to make sure that, like, you know, something doesn't access the Pandora system for, like, ever and go crazy, like, brr.
It has to be that combat android's finger, right?
It Nene's finger into the access area on the combat droid on Clarion, who she always calls Clarion.
So, but it has to be her. It can't be just any middle finger.
It's Nene's. Finger. It's Nene's finger.
Watch me whip. Watch me Nene.
Because she's the only other full body cyborg. So, like, she's enamored right off the bat with Clarion because Clarion is a being just like her. She believes, but Clarion's actually a combat android. And the arc of the whole series is that basically there are all these situations that pop off where the two of them end up having to protect them because some shit goes down, and as things look really bad, Uzal transfers ownership of Clarion to Nene and makes Clarion's primary objective Nene's safety.
Okay.
So against her wishes, Clarion has to protect Nene, so she always has to be with Nene, and as they're together all the time and all these things, she starts to come around and actually starts to care about Nene. And when you get towards the end episodes where, like, shit's popping off, she tries to do things by herself so that Nene won't get hurt, but she can't really accomplish what she wants to accomplish without Nene. Did I mention that they do kind of sort of defeat Boer, who is this big eyeball, black ball-looking thing that has a plasma cannon, and they end up defeating him, and Uzal's like, I need you to do me a favor, and I need you to take his core consciousness and keep it protected. And when they reach the core consciousness, it looks like a sunflower and a dragon had a baby with a demon, and he refers to himself as a five-legged prophet and God, and his fifth leg, which is his middle name, leg is actually his penis because he's a pervert. And so sometimes, like, when things happen in the right way, he raises his middle leg in a way that you're just like, oh, come on. Really, guys?
Gotta talk about your anime preference choices.
No, it's not preference. Like, I picked this solely based on the title. I didn't read the description. I should have.
This is kind of reminding me of when Ash Mom wanted to get me Rin Daughter Nemnese.
Yeah, Daughters of Nemnese are different. Like, that's just straight up softcore porn.
Well, that was just kind of like, hey, by the way, hermaphrodites.
Okay. Like, that's
just like, ain't nothing wrong with that, but this, Mom was like, this is safe.
This isn't porn, but it's right up against the line of inappropriate.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, the moments, like, really, it's the moments of accessing the Pandora system that are...
my Pandora system.
Are the thing, and the things with Boyer when he gets all excited. Which is why most of the series, like, Clarion is constantly, like, throwing him in a box or putting him in a safe and keeping him in the dark so that he won't... be a perv, because basically he's a young intelligent, so he just hasn't learned to not be a perv. So he's basically like in his teens, and he's a boy, so he's just a pervy boy.
I'm just so excited, look at my dick.
Basically, but with more dramatic language, like Shakespearean type language.
Behold my penis!
More like behold the evidence of his omnipotence, he would say. So anyway... But Boyer does have moments where he's, like, really sweet. You throw out the Boyer moments, and you throw out the actual accessing of the...
And it's fine?
Pandora system. And it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. And it mostly is just these two girls, like, getting into situations where they're just trying to be normal teenagers and figure out how to get to normalcy, because neither of them are normal. And meeting other people who become infected by how just sweet and positive and naive they are. And it makes them want to do good things as well. Because again, Nene's whole reason for being right now, her mission, is that she wants to bring about world peace, whether she buys it or does it. And so she's decided that since she doesn't have money, the easiest way she can do it is to start doing small good deeds that will hopefully ripple and ultimately lead to world peace. It's really sweet. Like, she uses the Pandora system one time to perform in the park because she figures it'll bring people happiness. And it does. And so she feels like she's done a good deed. You know? And so, like, it's very sweet. And when she does end up fighting, you know, it's always in service of protecting more people than anything else.
Okay.
It's a pervy kaleidostar. Okay. Slightly pervy.
Alright.
Slightly pervy. So I watched all 12 episodes. It was very cute to get through. When you get to the, you know, outside of the pervy stuff, which it just made me laugh more than be like, oh guys, this is really disgusting. I was just like, wow, that was, y'all was just looking for an excuse to put these two girls together body to body, but it's okay. It's another one that I've crossed off my list. I would say that if you, you know, like pretty girl transformation animes, this does have a transformation series. Once you get past the finger thing... Once you get past the finger thing, like, it's an action anime. Like, there's a point where they fight the super-duper bad guy. They're combat androids. Takumi is constantly trying to prove that she's a better scientist than Uzal, so she's creating stuff all the time and, like, back door because she's neat, so she doesn't actually like to go outside. She will project a hologram of herself outside if she ever has to. Is constantly trying to figure out, like, what Nene's deal is and what Nene's deal with Clarion is, because she can't read part of her code, so she's constantly getting frustrated. It's a cute anime outside of the pervy moments, and the pervy moments really are few and far between. So, like, I enjoyed it, and every time I, you know, they started talking about having to use the Pandora system, I would just kind of roll my eyes in the back of my head so we could get past
it. Here it comes.
Exactly.
Literally.
And then I'm like, of course, Pandora in the Crimson Shell. Yep, of course. Right, yes.
It's just craziness.
Right. But outside of that, it actually was, you know, a fun little anime. So if you're looking for a short-run anime...
I'm not ready.
And, you know, you don't mind the pervy. Just like sprinklages of perviness. Then, you know, Pandora's not a bad one to watch. Like, I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay.
But...
That says enough for me.
But I did finish... But I did finish the 12. Because I was like, alright, I've already started. I'm 2 in. There's only 12. I just might as well go ahead and finish it. And the 12 does tie the story up pretty neatly. You know, we learn why Nene is a full... bodied cyborg and why she's going to live with her aunt, who may or may not actually be her aunt, but that's because it was an accident. There was a fire in a cave in a building and her parents died and she was crushed by rocks, and so her body was mangled, and that's why, because of her age and whatnot, they tried her as a full body cyborg and it worked, so they just continued to do that, but they accelerated her growth. So, and they make mention of this in one of the series, so I'm like, so you have the body of a 16-year-old, but maybe the mind of, like, a 9-year-old?
Oh, yeah, because that's how you get around wanting to put your penis in a 9-year-old.
Finger. Because we're not talking about anything other than that. So, Pandora and the Crimson Shell, Go Stern, it's on Funimation, it's 12 episodes long, it's kind of pervy.
Longest 12 episodes you'll ever watch.
No. Pretty much any hentai is the longest 12 episodes. Any hentai. Like, I can make them through them, but I'm just like, I feel dirty.
Yeah.
And I don't mind porn, but, like, hentai, I just feel dirty. I don't know why.
Man, speaking of hentai.
Can't do that, though, because we're just about out of time. So, really quickly, we're not going to be able to talk about Overwatch.
We'll have to do it next week, and obviously we'll both have, hopefully at that point, played together.
Okay, so we'll have a couple of things going on next week. One, we're going to talk Overwatch.
Yep.
Two, we're going to talk E3.
Yes.
Because it will be upon us, people. So make sure that you check us out on social, follow us, ESH News, on the Twitter and the Instagrams, because the team will be sharing photos from all the stuff they do on the floor and the events that they go to throughout the show. We'll be sharing content on our website and on our social. If there's stuff you want people to check out and we haven't talked about checking it out yet, you can hit us up on our Twitter and we can see if we can make it by that booth or that experience for sure. But we're going to talk Overwatch and E3 next week, and then we're going to be all E3 like next week on the site, news, so... There's just all kinds of things that you want to make sure that you're checking in with us on to keep up with that stuff.
I need to shout out to someone on the YouTube tip who I've now become a Patreon for, because I think he's like the new hotness.
Uh-huh.
To some bustedness. So my shout out's going out to Nakey Jakey. I have dropped his videos on my Facebook page like crazy. I pretty much quote something he has said every other day. I think he's got a pretty fly flow. I mean, I'm not an expert or nothing, so don't take me as, like, a rap genius. But he's got some really cool, interesting things to say and review in rap style. He just did one about Overwatch, which kind of made me want to play Overwatch. So, I mean, I had to kind of, had to give him some props. So look for Nakey Jakey up on YouTube. Look at his games that should bang. I mean, he's got some really good points. I really think he needs to take off, so... There's my 2 cents, and I'm just going to leave it like that. And he's getting some of my money every month, so clearly, I think he's worth some money, so.
Well, I think we're worth some money, too, so maybe we should launch our Patreon pretty soon.
Let's have content first.
Yeah, let's get that done first, and then we'll launch it.
Then we'll launch.
As I said, all kinds of stuff going on all of our places. Make sure that you... have bookmarked our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. That's electricsisterhood.com. You can see all the stuff that we're writing about the entire team, comics, anime, movies, video games, on all kinds of platforms, including mobile. Like, we touch on damn near everything. News, reviews, previews, all that good stuff. So make sure that you bookmark electricsisterhood.com. You can also catch our podcast there. You can get our podcast in a plethora of places. You can get it in iTunes, either on your desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also find us in Stitcher Radio. You can also find it in Google Play. You can also find it on VogNetwork.com and pretty much any podcast search engine out there. If you're looking for Esh, you will find us. So grab a hold of our podcast, subscribe, share it with your friends, introduce people to us, let them know, and let us know that you like what we're doing and that we should keep doing it because we appreciate the feedback. So, in addition to our website, you should also check out our social. We are all over the place. We are on Twitter at ESH News, as well as Instagram at ESH News, sharing photos from various events that we go to, as well as games that we're playing, or just fun stuff that we think is cool. We share on our Instagram, so make sure that you check that out. You can also hit us up on Facebook. We share our reviews and our news there, so make sure that you share them with friends. You can also ask us questions on our social, or like Ascenda Leo did this week, if there's something that you want us to check out or you want to hear our opinion on, just mention us on Twitter, or send us a message, or post on our page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/landofesh. Like us, love us, interact with us, let us know what you want us to check out. Otherwise, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, but we'd love to hear from you guys, so make sure that you interact with us, as well as the other great, amazing shows and team members that make up the Land of Esh. Be sure to check out b3crew.com with our homie KBD at the helm, with the No Borders, No Race podcast about all things indie and entertainment-wise. It is a fun, fun, fun show. You should definitely check it out. And he's got some great reviews of anime, as well as entertainment and games on his site. So that's b3crew.com. Also, check out smashrook.com with live streams every Wednesday held down by the homie HamsterMan2049. And he plays a little bit of everything, old and new. So make sure that you check out smashrook.com and the homies' feeds on Twitch every Wednesday night at 9 Eastern. Phil the Issues Guy, can't say enough about this dude. Love him to pieces. And his recaps with Phil's recap and review is absolutely an enjoyable time. You've got to check out and be part of his Thrones recaps, guys. Like, even if you're not a Game of Thrones fan, you will be after checking out one of his recaps. So make sure that you hit up theissuesprogram.com and you check out Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Be part of the live chat. Call in live. It's a great time. And, of course, rounding out the fam, Nerd Crave, with all the stuff that nerds crave, our homies, nerdcrave.com. Check them out. Comics, anime, manga. It's a really, really fun site. We're nerdy people. You're nerdy people. Let's just nerd out together. So until E3 and Overwatch next week, I'm Ninja Sister.
I'm Pandalicious.
And we're out of here, guys.
I'm fucking tired.